Welcome to the fourth episode of Season 2 of Medical Design Briefs Podcast. I'm Sherry Trigg, Editor and Director of Content for Medical Design Briefs. Presented by the editors of SAE Media Group throughout the year, this new series will cover a variety of technologies that are poised to transform healthcare. In this season, we're taking an in-depth look at medical-grade wearables. My guest today is Nick Anetta, Senior Electrical Engineer at Priority Designs, who will talk to us about advances that have led to the evolution of wearable devices. We will explore how these innovations are reshaping the future of healthcare, making treatments more precise, portable, and patient-friendly than ever before. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Nick, can you please share with us a bit about yourself as well as an introduction to Priority Designs?
Sure. So I've been doing consulting, research and development in medical devices, oftentimes wearables, for about 14 years. My role is often in electronic hardware development around precision sensors, signal processing, data analysis, and testing these types of devices on study participants. A large portion of my work has been in neurotechnology. And Priority Designs is a design firm that partners with clients to help them design and develop their products. So we have capabilities that range from industrial design to engineering to soft goods to prototyping. Our shop is just amazing. To user research and far beyond that. We do a lot of work in the medical device space and in wearables specifically. We have this kind of unique combination of capabilities that I just mentioned that I think are particularly well suited for designing wearables. Something I didn't mention, we even have a digital knitting machine. Pretty unique combination here.
Wow. So let's get into it. Can you explain the significance of wearable devices as platforms for testing other wearable technologies? How does this concept contribute to the advancement of wearable technology as a whole?
Sure, yeah. So when someone wants to develop a wearable device, oftentimes they have an idea of, I want to put this sensor somewhere on the body. I don't know yet if it can do the thing that I want it to do. I don't know if it can detect the information that I think it can. And in order to test out that idea, you need to build a prototype. And oftentimes that's going to include something like a microcontroller with wireless capabilities, some sort of power management circuit, including a battery, maybe a user interface, with a button, LED, and things like that. But all of this has to be packaged in a form factor that can be placed on the body. In other words, it needs to be small. And now it takes a lot of time, effort, and money to develop systems like that oftentimes. But if you don't do it, it can kind of destroy your idea before it ever gets off the ground because it can negatively impact your sensor ultimately. Right. So yeah, here at Priority Designs, we've seen this problem. So we decided to develop our own platform, our own wearable platform, so that clients can come to us with different sensors, a variety of sensors, variety of actuators, and we can interface with them directly, sometimes with a little bit, just a small amount of additional hardware, software, or firmware development. And this kind of removes a lot of that barrier to entry that a lot of times prevents these wearable ideas from even getting off the ground or ever seeing the light of day. I think this concept is important in wearable development.
Interesting. So what are some of the key challenges in designing wearable devices for collecting physiological data for research purposes? And how are these challenges being addressed by recent advancements in technology?
So, we actually happen to be helping a client do this right now. We're helping redesign a previous generation of their physiological monitoring device, which is a wearable. Mm-hmm. And, there's a lot of challenges with wearables, but an overarching challenge, of course, is how do you make this discrete, small, you know, as invisible to the user as possible, but also invisible to others. So, right. You know, you're not creating a stigma and things of that nature. So in terms of size, the continued advancement in integrated circuits is, you know, obviously going to have has had a giant impact on right. the wearable device mm-hmm. development. So, you know, for example, integrated circuits now, in addition to just being smaller, they're also incorporating application-specific functionality. By that, I mean integrated circuit manufacturers are designing devices for wearables, things that the features that they know wearables are going to need. So you might have an ECG, electrocardiogram IC that has not just an amplifier like it may have had at one point, but it also has all these different features of ECG, and it's done in a low power way, and it's very small. So not only does this shrink the circuit, but it also reduces power to then shrink the battery, which not only shrinks the size, but it also reduces the weight a lot. So this has been, you know, critical, of course. Yeah. Another important challenge that's been advanced here is removing the tether. So mm-hmm. most wearables, you don't want to have a tether, cannot possibly have a tether from your device itself to, say, a computer. Right. So thankfully, wireless technology like Bluetooth has become ubiquitous. So we can now, you know, transmit data to things like phones, which seem to be all over the place yeah. now. And right. phones now, because of these advancements in ICs, have all this additional storage and processing power. And, oh, by the way, they're connected to the cloud, which has even more storage, even more processing power. So this has snowballed for us, mm-hmm. right? And the cloud is very much impacting the wearable device development. And then I guess the third thing that comes to mind is just managing the wires on the body. So this is a big challenge that yes. we've made a lot of improvements on in recent years. There's a lot of research and development going into this. And a lot of it comes down to the hard-soft connection, we'll call it, going from, say, a rigid circuit board down to some sort of conductor on maybe a textile. How do you do that? It's not as easy as it sounds. And there's been a lot of different approaches that have been tested out, and some of them are gaining some traction. We're starting to see more and more wearable shirts out there, mostly in the yes. consumer space. Mm-hmm. And they're leveraging things like conductive yarns or flexible and stretchable printed electronics, printed boards, conductive inks, and things of that nature. We're trying out a lot of these technologies here, prior designs ourselves, like with that digital knitting machine that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. But again, there's going to be a lot of different approaches, and it's not going to be one size fits all.
So you actually have touched a lot on my next question, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it, and you can see if there's anything else you can fill in here. Can you discuss some specific examples of wearable devices that have significantly impacted the field of healthcare by making treatments more precise, portable, and patient-friendly? What features or functionality set these devices apart from traditional healthcare tools?
Sure. Yeah. So there are specific devices that come to mind that maybe leverage some of the things that I just mentioned. And I mean, I'll go back to a device called LifeVest, which is now made by Zoll. And that was over 20 years ago that was approved. And that's a wearable device that can detect life-threatening heart rhythms and then deliver a defibrillation shock to the patient. So the reason why I bring this up is, I mean, it's impressive for a number of reasons, one of which that it's actually from a wearable to getting good enough ECG signal quality that can detect this state. And then it actually delivers the life-saving intervention to the patient. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about it. And this, again, was over 20 years ago, showing that wearables are not just toys. This is a real medical device here, right? And it saved right. a lot of lives. And then you cut to, you know, activity trackers like Fitbit and Apple Watch that all of a sudden exploded right. everywhere. These are not medical devices, consumer electronics. And they were accepted widely all around. People adopted this idea that I want to see my data and I mm-hmm. want to, you know, take some ownership over my own health. Well, again, not directly medical devices, but then cut to, say, continuous glucose monitors, which have right. been around a little, you know, a while as well, typically in a form of, you know, a patch. They're providing continuous updates to patients, to users about their blood sugar levels. Well, interestingly enough, just last month, Dexcom had one of their devices FDA cleared for the first time for an over-the-counter continuous glucose monitor. Right. So this is actually aimed towards users that don't use insulin and mm-hmm. don't have hypoglycemia. So it's really for people that want to just better understand how their diet and exercise is impacting their blood sugar. And also for, I think, those taking oral medications, I believe they say, for this sort of thing. But it just points to this this progression that you see of mm-hmm. These devices, these wearable devices being more and more adopted and desired by the general public. And then again, now we're taking what I would consider serious medical data and providing it directly to users. Yes. So it'd be very interesting to see how, if and how this particular device is adopted.
Right, right. So with the increasing popularity of wearable devices, how do the manufacturers ensure the accuracy and reliability of that data collected, especially in medical research settings where precision is critical?
Yeah, it's a big challenge. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, wearables have this somewhat unique challenge of being in every use case that you can think of, and then a whole lot more. If someone's using a wearable, you have no idea what they're going to get themselves into. And that's, as an engineer, incredibly difficult to design around. Right. You know, I should say that, of course, with any medical device, you need to be developing this under a quality system. And this will help walk you through or guide you through the medical device development process, which helps you to think, stop and think about all these different considerations. It's not going to do the work for you, but it will help you during that process. Mm-hmm. So from a design standpoint, there's no one size fits all. There's going to be, probably unique solutions for every device, but one kind of general approach that I've seen is using multiple sensors of the same and different kinds to gain confidence in your reading. So for example, if you're particularly interested in maybe a feature of the cardiac waveform, and you have some electrocardiograms, some ECG sensors on your wearable, you might add additional sensors, redundancy, okay, fairly basic. Well, now you might also add a sensor to detect when an electrode is lifting. Okay, so that'd be maybe all the same kind, let's say. Well, you might also want to add a sensor like an inertial measurement unit, an IMU. This could give you information about the orientation of the user. Are they in the right posture to be mm-hmm. even be taking this reading? Or are they running? And you know from your test data that you're not going to be able to get this data when you're running, and you should ignore it. Don't be tripped by this data. You might also know that if the user is flexing their chest muscles at the same time as you're taking this ECG reading, it's going to interfere. So you add some EMG sensors, some electromyography sensors to detect mm-hmm. this sort of thing. So all these things stack up. These sensor data streams stack up to give you a level of confidence that your algorithm is accurate. You could think of it as kind of gating the output of your algorithm, or in some cases, these are just all different features, input streams to your algorithm, and ultimately giving you just a better confidence in your algorithm. So that's kind of a design approach to helping this issue. And then during testing, of course, when you need to confirm that your device is accurate, you know, this is a huge challenge as well. ideally, you'd be comparing against the gold standard. So you wear your device during testing, and you stop maybe periodically and test in the standard lab equipment to compare your device. But frankly, a lot of times that's not really an option, and then you're going to have to come up with a custom solution for that for that particular study.
Well, so let's wrap it up with this final question. As wearable technology continues to evolve, what are some emerging trends or technologies that you believe will further revolutionize the field of healthcare and medical research in the near future? And how might these advancements shape the landscape of healthcare delivery and patient outcomes?
So as I mentioned before, this all this work being done on the hard-soft connection and then integrating wearables directly into garments, I think as we see this take off, this is going to open up a lot of opportunities to provide actual healthcare monitoring, not just kind of consumer activity monitoring, but actual healthcare and treatment, but in a user-friendly and continuous way that I think a lot of this is moving towards. Another trend that we've seen for a number of years is with all this data being produced, everyone wants the data, not just the users. You know, of course, we naturally think that we want to feed this data to healthcare workers.
Right.
But there's so much data, it needs to be distilled down. Otherwise, it's entirely overwhelming. With recent advancements in machine learning, artificial intelligence, we can not only really mine an individual's data for specific things, but we can look more at a population and use learnings from one person to another. So there's a lot of things that a lot of progress that can be made here soon, but there's a lot of challenges in implementing it, of course, in terms of privacy, cybersecurity. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes, but it needs to happen, really. It's going to happen in my estimation. Manufacturers, of course, and insurance companies want to see this data. They're interested in things like compliance. You know, our users, our patients, following along with how the device is prescribed to be used, things of that nature, driving dollars eventually. So just the data side, I'm very curious about where this is going trend wise. But it's going somewhere. And then lastly, closed loop systems. I think this is the next frontier. This is these are things that have been talked about for a long time. So closed loop system being where you sense something, deliver therapy based on that, then sense again, and driving towards this kind of controlled state. Very personalized, instead of like an open loop system, which would just be, deliver therapy. And then eventually, maybe a long time later, you take a measurement manually and manually adjust something, which is, the current state of the art for a lot of types of devices. Well, with the ability to put things on people, i.e. wearables, we now have access to taking these continuous measurements and continuously adjusting. Continuous glucose monitors, we've been talking about this for a very long time in terms of combining that with an insulin pump, making the artificial pancreas. Hasn't happened yet, but I think we're getting closer. Little bit by little bit. And another place that's near and dear to my heart in terms of neurotechnology is targeted electrical or nerve stimulation. So I believe you talked to CEO of Ovation not long ago, makers of Vivali. That's a fantastic example of a closed loop neurostimulation device. Totally non-invasive, wearable device, providing that therapy. There's a lot more on the horizon. There's a lot of research being done on things like vagus nerve stimulation. So there are implantable devices for doing vagus nerve stimulation, which treat a variety of conditions. But there's been a lot of work done in transcutaneous VNS. And so you're hitting the vagus nerve oftentimes kind of indirectly, but then you're still having this therapeutic effect. Yes. And again, you can, it's very likely that we can do this in a closed loop way. And in terms of nerve stimulation or electrical muscle stimulation, using functional electrical stimulation to help rehabilitate and assist those with movement disorders, I think there's a lot to be done there soon in the future. So there's a lot on the horizon, and a lot of it is enabled by these advancements in wearable technology and it becoming just more usable.
Yes. Yes. And it's also fascinating. Nick, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your insights and your expertise with our listeners.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Join us in June for season 3, where our guests will look at the role of robotics and robots in healthcare. If you'd like to provide feedback on this episode, please email me at sherry.trigg@saemediagroup.com. You can listen to this podcast at medicaldesignbriefs.com/podcasts or on your favorite podcast app, such as Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you for listening and watch for more coverage of exciting new technologies in the coming weeks.